Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit PetesGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
And we're back. Welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He's Steve. And on the line is Ian Andrew of Ian Andrew Golf Design. Ian, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really well.
Thank you for taking a little time out of your weekend to join us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Let's start with, I'm always interested in the beginnings. And where does how does this story begin for you as a golf course architect?
Well, I wanted to do this from the age of about 11 or 12 years old. And that's a pretty common story, actually, with a lot of architects. And I had mentioned that to my father. And rather than get the discouraging, you should be a lawyer or a doctor or something else, my dad said, that's an interesting choice. And then went out and got me some books to read and then got me to take up the game. My dad actually was a really, really terrific player. Taught me how to play. And then we started making trips, and I would say by the age of 18, he'd found me copies of Golf Course Architecture in America by George Thomas, which is a very hard find even today. And we had gone and made 5 trips at that point. We ended up making 6 trips. But I played some top 100 courses by the time I was 18. I actually could play decent back then too, which was helpful, but he played well, and he gave me quite an education on the game, particularly we played Pinehurst. And what was fascinating about that was I thought he'd hit the ball lousy that day, but he was playing short all day and getting up and down because it was really dry and he'd found the greens to be very challenging. And it was an education in how the game works and alternatives and strategy. And actually, we sat and talked for about an hour about the golf course. And I would say that was the greatest lesson in strategy I ever got.
What struck you as a 12-year-old that captured you so deeply that that's something that you decided you wanted to do?
Pebble Beach. So my father watched professional golf on TV, and I was watching the Pebble Beach Pro-Am with him and went and got some. I was always encouraged to draw and paint and things like that, particularly by my mom. And I just went and got some Bristol board, and I started drawing all the holes. And over the period of a couple of days, I pretty much got a bad-looking layout, but a decent-looking layout of what Pebble Beach was. And I used to have this English game called, I think it was called Par Golf, and it was all famous UK courses, holes on this one golf course where they put it together. And what I did was I made a version of that game out of Pebble Beach, and I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked off of that weekend.
Of course, we're talking with Ian Andrew, Canadian of Ian Andrew. So that's my question is, yes, I mean, you know, Pebble Beach and Pinehurst, as you mentioned, but how does a Canadian get himself sort of involved with, you mentioned American golf courses, obviously. There's some great golf courses up in Canada as well.
So I went to university and I actually got a couple of degrees, but I have a degree in landscape architecture. And that gave me sort of the background. And then I started working in 1989 for a fellow named Doug Carrick. I had gone out of my way to meet him during school. In fact, I'd gone out of my way to meet a number of people in the golf business. And Doug and I kind of hit it off, and eventually he made me an offer to come and join him. So I've always said I apprenticed under Doug for 17 years. He taught me sort of the fundamentals of architecture, but also because we had a lot of new builds back then, I got to learn a lot about construction. And I was one of those people where I would do what I needed to do on behalf of the company. And then a lot of times I would try to spend extra time on the construction sites with people learning things. And a lot of superintendents and a lot of construction managers spent a lot of time teaching me. Because I was inquisitive and I asked a lot of questions, a lot of people invested a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to learn everything.
So you mentioned about construction. So I'm curious to know, what are the different challenges in, let's say, creating a brand new golf course from nothing, as opposed to, let's say, doing a rebuild or a restoration of something that's already there?
So the challenges in new, the joke has always been you've got 150 or 180 acres to lose your mistake. So I would argue it's actually easier to build new. But the challenges are finding, it's solving problems usually about sequencing. So the challenges are when you're given a lot of environmentally sensitive areas and then trying to still get a great golf course when you're trying to work around land you can't get into. And then sometimes you're sort of, the site's a challenge and the budget doesn't quite meet the same challenge. Those things are very difficult to deal with. You've got to try to figure out ways around that. With the restoration or the renovation end of things, the challenge is usually has to do with membership or attached to things. Sometimes they're attached to things that they shouldn't be. Sometimes, rightfully, they're attached to things they really should be. But it's sort of negotiating through that process to try and convince people to sort of see the bigger vision. But, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to help people understand why you're looking at things the way you are. And a lot of it, I think, is education. It's not convincing. It's not dictating. Definitely not dictating, because that doesn't help anybody. But it's educating. And I think once everybody sort of shares a vision, then you're in a really good place to move forward. And that's what it is. It's just becoming confident together. And the other thing is about renovations and restoration. Not as much where you are, but most other areas, and particularly in Canada, it just takes time. You don't have to worry about budget. It's just how many years it's going to take. And I've got one I'm 24 years into now. I've been working with the club. They just don't have a lot of money, but we're almost done.
You mentioned the idea of restoration and renovation. You know, for people who are not familiar with the business, you know, that those terms get thrown around. How do you define the difference between a restoration and a renovation?
So restoration is when you you dig up the history of the golf course. Hopefully it's ground photos. They provide a more accurate vision of what was there in the past. And aerials are always easy to find. It's just a matter of how far back you can go. Sometimes you can find drawings by the architect, or you can even find notes. I have great notes for Knollwood in Westchester. I've got great sure. notes from Charles Banks during construction. So that's really cool to have that. It's an extra window in. But what we're trying to do with restoration is essentially make the golf course look and feel the same way as it used to. So sometimes that's a different technique on how you say you return a bunker, but how it's grassed. And then the other thing is just to put things back the way they are. A number of us talked about how do you deal with, you're probably going to follow up with how do you deal with the modern game.
Yeah.
With restoration, you largely don't. You largely leave most of it the way it was. And then what you do is if you have a couple of good opportunities that make sense, you may move some fairway bunkers around. Or I tend to just concentrate on a few fairway bunkers. So you may add a few, or you may move a few if there's some logic where you can move something from a hillside into a hillside further down that works really well, where you can replicate the look and you can replicate the style. At Knollwood, there's only two holes we did that, but we did do that in two holes where we moved things down where we could duplicate it, and then the rest of it we just left alone. And you kind of come to terms with technology does overwhelm the odd thing, but a lot of stuff holds up really well for the remainder of players. Because got to remember, technology is really only feeding sort of between 1% and 5%, depending on what you're talking about. The rest play the same game they did 20 years ago in the same distances.
Sure.
So nothing's really changed that much.
When
do you want me to answer renovation, or do you want to go ahead?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So with renovation, what it is you may, I always, even when I renovate, I always try to take the fabric of the existing golf course, because I think it's unfair to pull it completely apart. What I'm trying to do is use ideas or use something. The only difference is if you're going to do a full bunker job, sometimes you'll take it to a new place. But the idea is to bring a theme or an idea or a slightly different approach to the golf course, and then you start to place. The best way I can put it is you place part of your vision over the top. I personally don't have a tendency to do much with fairways. I found I can really hide. Say I've got a green rebuilt by somebody and then I've got 17 greens of original architect. I'm pretty good at taking that green and working it so I don't have to rebuild the green because it's healthy, but maybe I'd make it fit in with the fact I've got 17 Ross greens. And so what I'll do is I'll do all the work around it just to hide it. So that's still a renovation. You're still making change because you're working with, usually with a new green site or a new hole. There's a lot of that in golf where we're 15, 16 holes of the original golf course, and then we've got a couple of holes done by somebody else because there's been a land parcel sold off or a bit of change or sometimes renovation for length. So you sort of deal with that. You kind of retrofit within the fabric. I've only occasionally blown something up and take an existing golf course and actually apply to a whole new set of ideas and regrass the whole thing. And it's like a new build. That's exciting to do, but it's very rare.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is golf course architect Ian Andrew. Yeah, one more quick question before we take a break, because speaking of renovation, I happen to notice in your remarks about what you did last year, you said that the best renovation that you saw last year in your travels is a Tillinghast course. And of course, big fans of Tillinghast are we, was it Sleepy Hollow? What was it about Sleepy Hollow that impressed you so much?
So the part that I really enjoyed about Sleepy is, I thought all the work that was done, cause I'd seen it before, all the work that was done with the existing, I thought was just, the level of detail, the quality was outstanding. But what I was really taken back by was the upper holes where Gil had decided that he was going to take the Tillinghast changes up top, and he was going to bring them more to McDonald and Rayner. And so a few of the holes, there were some changes made, and I thought the changes all worked. I thought it actually made the golf course a little bit more consistent thematically. I thought the some of the holes were even more interesting with the changes. And, you know, you're taking something that was already really quite good, and the ability to take something that's that good and take it up a notch, you know, whether it's Sleepy or whether it's Cal Club out west, it doesn't happen too often, but you've got to admire the architects when they do that. Because it's taking a chance when you're dealing with a rich history and you sort of start to step in a little bit. You know, it puts you in a spot where you may hit a home run like Gil did, but you also you're taking a risk. You're setting yourself up for criticism if it doesn't work out. So I just thought it was a great job. I really loved the golf course. I thought Tom had it in amazing shape, and I thought they'd seen every single detail, the rolled off edges, the way that the plateaus were completely identified by the grassing, by having the edges rolled over so that you're only looking at the plateaus at the top. There's no sort of rough lines. There was little details that were done so well.
Our guest is Ian Andrew, golf design. We're going to take a short break. I want to follow that up. You mentioned risk-taking, which brings me to another question, but I want to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the tri-state area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
And welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony and he's Steve. And on the line is Ian Andrew, golf course architect. Ian, you mentioned the idea of taking risks. Do you find that, or do you think that people are taking enough risks these days in terms of golf course architecture?
Ooh, okay.
you got him on that one.
No, I was going to say, I think Gil, we just talked about, I think Gil's successfully taking quite a bit of risk, and I think some of the work he's doing is just outstanding. And so I think there are people like him. Kyle Phillips is somebody I just mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think these guys are taking, successfully taking some risk and really pushing the envelope. I mean, if you've seen Gil's work at Stream Song, I'm going blank. I was trying to think, Oh Hoopie, places like that.
Yeah.
I think he's really risk taking, and, you know, some of it, will draw criticism, and then, some of it will draw sort of open mouth awe. And so I think if anybody's really pushing the envelope, it's probably, Gil and Jim. I do think there's a segment within our golf architecture circles that don't take risks, and they have a tendency to follow the same patterns, and they repeat themselves too much. And part of that is what they may see as being dead honest or providing known and comfortable and really, really straightforward strategies as being the way to go about things. But the problem is, as golfers, we need variety, and we need things that make us pause and think, or we need to be making choices, or sort of stuck for what we should do. You keep reaching for a club and you keep going back to the other club. You should feel like that. And I think some of the architects and particularly some of the popular architects from days gone by play it way too straight or way too safe. And I think that's why the work's not going to hold up in the long haul like some of the golden age architects do, because I think they just ask better questions. And I think if you ask simple questions, say you go to a quiz, if somebody asks simple, straightforward questions where you get most of them, it's not actually that fun to be quizzed. But if somebody really pushes everybody's buttons and you're all looking at each other and trying to figure out an answer, I participate in something like that every Christmas, a big charity quiz. It's fun. It's fun to really be pushed. And I wish they would push themselves more.
So bringing it back to local flair with the remaining minutes that we have. So you've been involved in work at Wheatley Hills Country Club. Last year you rebuilt the fourth green, and this fall you plan on finishing your bunker restoration project. So how do you perceive things are going at Wheatley Hills?
Really well. That's been one of the most fun jobs I've had in a long time. What we've been doing is trying to bring it back to Emmett. And so we've got a really good old aerial that we've been working at. So when we meet, it's always in our hands, and we're always sort of talking things through. Ben Orlowski, who's the superintendent, is just a delight to work with, really bright, really, really bright superintendent. And so we just talk things through with the committee. And so, you know, we started off with the 13th, which is kind of an iconic par 3 as one of the early holes we did. And sort of setting the what to expect. Funny enough, in that case, we removed a lot of bunkers to make it look more comfortable or encourage a little bit more aggressive play. But the funny part is, I think we made it much more dangerous. But it just because we did it in a subtle way, it doesn't look dangerous.
Right.
And then we've been trying to put back bunkers and move out the grassing lines and just try to identify the architecture, because the architecture is pretty cool. And the big swing for the fences, it was funny, we were talking about risk. Our big swing for the fences was the punch bowl on the fourth. We had this super pitch green that was anything from 7 down to about 5% through the bulk of the green, and then the very bottom was pinnable. That didn't work in today's day and age because there was no pins left. But it was also, it was like a flat plate set against the hillside. And we talked about that hole for a while with the committee about different ideas. And then finally we pitched the idea of extending the landform on the right-hand side and then just creating a punch bowl. And I would say that's my big swing for the fences. That's our big swing for the fence, where we took a huge risk. And I'll be honest, you know, like I even got on a dozer to push some material around. It wasn't the plan. It just was the circumstance. And I remember as we were pushing it out, you weren't sure how it was. It's funny. Sometimes we build things. You're not sure how it's going to go. And you just go and you move stuff. And if it feels right, you just keep going in that direction. And that's kind of how it came together.
Pretty interesting.
Best of luck.
Yeah, best of luck. And I hopefully we can we'll extend this conversation on a podcast. But we're just about out of time. And I want to thank you so much for carving out a little time for us this Saturday morning.
I enjoyed this very much. Look forward to that podcast, the additional one. I'd love to do that. And I enjoyed today a lot. By the way, your music's great.
Thank you. All right. That was Ian Andrew, Golf Design, doing some local work here. Thank you for joining us this week, folks. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.